Hello, everybody. It's Anthony Trombetta, and welcome to the third episode of the Better Knows Best podcast, the podcast dedicated to all things movies and television and anything in between in the showbiz world. Primarily, it's movies, because I feel that's what I have the most knowledge in and I'm most comfortable talking about. And, you know, I won't sound like a bumbling idiot for a half hour or 45 minutes. I can actually, you know, shed some light on some things and share my opinion on things. Tonight, or today, or whenever you're listening to this podcast, it's been a while since I've been able to sit down. It's only been about a week, but I'm still here. I mean, I haven't put this to the side. I've just been doing a couple of things and running around. I haven't been able to really sit here and think about, well, what am I going to say and what are we going to talk about? There's a lot to get to on this episode. Mostly, in particular, I'd like to get to the 2013 summer movie season. There were a lot of movies that came out from the months of May to, I guess, mid-September is when the kind of summer movie season kind of dwindles down. So today I'd like to talk about those, the good ones, the bad ones, the ugly ones, you know, the mediocre ones, the ones that were underestimated, the ones that are overhyped, everything. We're going to try to get to a lot of those. So that'll take up a bunch of our time today. Last week, I started the show by recommending two movies. I think I recommended War Horse and Babysitters. Today, I'd like to do the same thing. I'm recommending two movies that kind of fall in the same kind of genre. They're both family dramas that deal with revenge in a way. The first movie is Death Sentence by James Wan. Death Sentence stars Kevin Bacon. I believe it was released in around 2007 or so. It stars Kevin Bacon. It's directed by James Wan, who's done Saw and Insidious and Dead Silence and The Conjuring and Insidious 2. He is one of my favorite directors. He's a younger director. He's got a real gritty and raw directing style, and I really admire it. Kevin Bacon plays a father. His name's Nick Hume in the film, and he is this kind of regular, suburban, good job father who, you know, brings his son to his practices and cares about his kid's future and loves his wife and all that. And he's bringing his son home from a hockey game one night, and there's a gang that kind of, you know, jumps the son. And I don't want to spoil anything more for you, but it's basically, you know, it's a revenge story where, you know, this father goes after this gang. And it's a great way of developing a character. I love how Kevin Bacon starts in the beginning of the film as, again, this kind of suburban father, this normal, you know, Joe who's got this good job, and where he ends at the end of the film, where he's just, you know, distraught, and he's become kind of basically a gang member at towards the end. John Goodman's in it, Kelly Preston's in it. It's a really, really good film. It's in my top 50 of all time. It's an underrated independent movie. My next film is one that for some reason is not critically acclaimed. It is my favorite Denzel movie, and it's my favorite Denzel performance, and that's a movie called John Q. John Q was released, I want to say, in like 2002. It stars Denzel Washington, Robert Duvall, James Woods, Anne Hesh, Ray Liotta's in it. It's got this great big cast. I think even E from Eric Murphy from Entourage is in it. What's his name? Kevin O'Donnell, I believe. He's in it too. It's this great cast, and it also kind of deals with the same kind of revenge-esque story. But in this one, it's not revenge events against a gang. It's the revenge against kind of healthcare. And I also like John Q's transition and character development in this. It's different than Kevin Bacon's. You know, he doesn't turn into this crazy, you know, gang member, but he just kind of breaks down, and, you know, he tried so hard, and he has, you know, he had this plan about how he was going to help his son, and basically the story is about his son who has this heart disease, and there's some healthcare problems, and you really just got to sit down and enjoy this film. It's a great, gripping drama, and it's by far my favorite Denzel Washington performance. Now, I like Denzel. I really do. I've always liked Denzel, but I think there was a time after, I want to say, after about 2000, I think right when Training Day started, He started to play the same roles. Now, John Q came out in 2002, so that'll be the, you know, the one that stays away from that. But Training Day and Man on Fire and Out of Time and The Manchurian Candidate and even Inside Man, which is a movie that I enjoy so much. But I feel like he just started to play the same kind of character, and his acting didn't have much depth to it. You know, we kind of just saw Denzel all the time, and that plays into the escapism factor. One of the three categories that I use to, or one of the three, you know, ways that I judge a film is story, storytelling, and escapism. How well I can you know, be involved in the film world. And it diminishes when Denzel starts to be in these movies that he kind of plays the same kind of guy and the same kind of actor, you know, doesn't do much in it. But John Q is definitely not one of those. He's really, really good in it. Also, I think The Book of Eli, he redeemed himself. I thought he was great in that movie. I thought the movie was great. American Gangster was good. It's one of the films that I enjoy a lot. But I don't think that his acting performance is necessarily anything too stellar to talk about. And I think where he really redeemed himself was Flight. Flight was a great movie. It was a great character. So maybe it's not his acting. Maybe it might be the writing that he gets or the writing that he chooses. You know, he might have fell off the wagon and picked a couple action movies to get him some big paychecks maybe in the early 2000s. I'm not sure. So I'm giving Denzel the benefit of the doubt. I'm just saying there's just kind of this aura of, you know, him playing the same kind of character for about 5 or 6 years. But hopefully he's broken out of that. And I think Flight, which came out last year, was definitely one of those movies. But then he followed up with Two Guns, which was like, you know, it was a decent action movie. I think Mark Wahlberg was great in that. He broke out of any kind of stereotype that you categorize Mark Wahlberg as. But definitely some of his highlights over the last year, Denzel, has been Flight, Book of Eli, and this being my favorite, John Q. So those are the two movies that I'm recommending this week. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, before we get into the summer movie season, I wanted to talk a little bit about the director and what the director... This is kind of common sense, but just so you know... The kind of way that I process movies, I see the director as this, you know, he's the main person that's in charge. I think anybody can agree with that. You know, a lot of people will say now that the producer gives the money and the producer's really in charge. It's still a director. It's overall his vision of what the project needs to look like, especially the directors that I follow. You know, I don't follow directors that, you know, put out action movies or, you know, even if some of my guys do put out action movies, they're not just listening to what the studio says. And I don't really buy into that in general. I don't think that I think directors do have the ultimate say about how they want their film to look. If anybody's getting talked, you know, being pushed or nudged by producers, more or less it's with these big budget movies. So ultimately this director needs to have 5 strong relationships in order to make a movie fully work. And those 5 relationships are with his actors, his writer, his cinematographer, his editor, and his music. And those are the 5 things that if you can make those all work and they're not offsetting or getting mad at each other, or, you know, they're not, you know, because sometimes you can have these great actors signed on and this script is bad. And sometimes, you know, the script can be bad, the acting can be great, but the cinematography is mediocre. You know, and cinematography can go, it can go a long way. When I talk about cinematography, I'm talking about anything involving the lighting and involving the camera work. You know, the way things are shot and the way a scene looks can be really visually appealing. In order to have a great movie, in order to have, dare I say, a perfect movie, these 5 things need to work extremely well with each other. The example that I'll use to kind of put into perspective what it means to have these 5 things working in such synchronicity is the movie Drive, but in 2011 by Nicholas Winding Refn, starring Ryan Gosling and Carey Mulligan and Albert Brooks and Bryan Cranston and Ron Perlman. This is my second favorite movie of all time, behind Jaws. And while it's behind Jaws, it's first in the movie that I think is the most visually elusive and exotic to watch. I think the cinematography, and that cinematography is again that lighting and where the camera is placed and the set design and everything. I think the cinematography of that movie is the best thing. Not probably, not one of. It is the best thing I've ever seen. It's incredible. It's literally art, and that's the way that I kind of see it. That whole movie is a work of art. It's a masterpiece by Refn and Gosling, which I love in that movie. So that's a movie that works on all five of those things. That act, you know, I think obviously the acting is great. And then their screenplay. Now here's the problem with the screenplay is that a lot of people when they see Drive, they're like, well, Ryan Gosling didn't even talk the whole movie. He had like five lines. Okay, fine. That was the point. You know, not every movie is as fast paced dialogue as Woody Allen. You know, not every movie just spews off, you know, line after line after line. Sometimes it takes, and this is a more real approach. You know, if you're just sitting in the car with somebody, you guys aren't going back and forth, you know, constantly. No, there's this real, especially if it's somebody who you're just talking to, like Driver and Carrie Mulligan's character. It's more intimate. It's you know, it's new. It's you have to experience it, and there's not, and it's kind of awkward, and it's just a lot more real, and it adds so much to Gosling's character that he wasn't just spewing off lines. It made you have to really focus on his face and on his expressions and on his body language and on his costume as far as what he was wearing and his car, and it made you really focus on the movie. And that was so important to me, and that's why I love this movie so much. There are movies that I I love Woody Allen, but there are movies that I love because of, you know, the great dialogue, and that's why I love Aaron Sorkin, because he's got this, he's the best person to write a movie about dialogue between two people. There's nobody that, if you're in a room with two people, there's nobody better that can write for those two people than Aaron Sorkin, and he'll have constant dialogue, and it's wonderful. But sometimes it's good to totally detach from that and follow a character like Driver and follow a movie like Drive. And that's why I really love it. And most importantly, I adore the cinematography, and I love the music in it by Cliff Martinez and all the electronic music that he puts in it. This is a movie that I can really say works on all five levels. It has great acting. I believe the screenplay is good, because it's what the director and what the actor want, and it works so well for this movie. And it also allows you to really experience the music more, and again, experience the cinematography more. So the acting, the writing, the editing is wonderful. It's well cut. And that also plays with the music as well, because that includes the sound mixing. So if you haven't seen Drive, you have to experience this movie. It's extremely, extremely well made. And, you know, Refn released Only God Forgives this past summer, which was another movie that I saw. And it obviously wasn't Drive. And he may make 15 more movies and they may all be trash, but this will be his wonder. This will always be his masterpiece. So well done. All right, let's get into it. The summer 2013 movie season. I'm going to start right off the bat and tell you this. It was one of the worst summer movie seasons we've had in the past 5 or 6 years. I did not enjoy a lot of these movies. A lot of these movies got me discouraged. But that's why the fall movie season is the more appealing one to me as somebody who loves film so much. You know, I give the summer movie season to my inner superhero fan and to my inner nerd and all that kind of stuff. That's what I give the summer movie season. I don't expect to see the next Godfather in the summer movie or the next Jaws, even though Jaws started the summer blockbuster. But I do think that this was one of the worst summer movie seasons we've had in a couple of years. We've had such big hits over the past, you know, decade or so, big superhero movies. This is obviously the era of superhero movies, and we just keep putting them out. But I do think that the ones that were released this year and the movies are in general, besides about a solid 5 or 6 were really, really good. And there were a couple in there that are even, you know, that are dancing in my top 50 or top 100. But in general, this was not the best movies we can get. You know, we're nowhere near the next golden age if this is going to be the movies that we produce. But that's why there falls here. That's what I love. And we'll talk about the movies coming out in the fall and the Oscar contenders and the big, great acting performances and what I love the getting down to. We'll talk about those in a couple of weeks. So let's start off in May. We'll get you to that big budget Iron Man 3, which I think was a decent film. You know, I saw it last week when it came out on DVD, and I changed my opinion a little bit about it. Iron Man 3 was the big winner at the box office this summer, and so far the biggest winner of 2013. It grossed over $450 million. Everybody was obviously waiting for Iron Man 3, and I think Marvel knew that. And you know, Marvel's in their own world right now, where they're trying to connect movies and connect characters, and they're doing all these, you know, scenes afterwards and all this stuff, and they're trying to. Well, first of all, they're trying to make the most money possible, and that's why they'll be a little bit different from the movies that come out from Warner Brothers and you know, movies that are kind of helmed by Nolan and the Zack Snyders of the world. But I still liked Iron Man 3. Don't get me wrong. I think it had a nice ending. I enjoyed the ending a lot, actually. I think it was better than Iron Man 2. And having seen it again, I do enjoy the movie in general. I think Favreau was a better director. I think the story in this one was a little more complicated, investigated more characters that weren't able to be fully developed. I didn't like what they did with Ben Kingsley's character. I liked Guy Pearce's storyline. I liked Robert Downey Jr., but I didn't enjoy, you know, like he had these panic attacks all of a sudden. He's like lost in, you know, East Bumble Nowhere in like Montana. I don't know where he was. I didn't enjoy a lot of the action scenes. I think weren't the best, weren't up to the top tier that they could be. And, you know, this is the kind of movie where you can go in and say, let's go, let's watch some great action scenes. And I didn't see the best part of that until the end of the movie, where they have this kind of brawl on the tanker. And I did like the additional Iron Man suits and the, you know, the robotic and Jarvis is controlling them. I really, really enjoyed that. There were just a lot of plot holes in it, and it wasn't the best superhero movie I've seen, but it was still good. It was entertaining. That's what you go to the, that's what you kick up. It was a good way to kick off the summer. It was an entertaining movie. Rating wise, I give it a 7.2, and that's keeping in mind those three categories that I talked about last week on how I judge a movie: story, storytelling, and escapism. On escapism, I think it did pretty well, and I wasn't totally invested in Tony Stark and his world. I think the storytelling was lacking, and I think the story was really the biggest thing that was lacking. So I give it around the 7.2 as far as my rating for it. The next movie I saw was The Great Gatsby, which I loved. It was so against the critics. Some people loved it. Some people hated it. I actually enjoy Baz Luhrmann's or Luhrmann's. I don't know how to pronounce his name. He did Moulin Rouge. I really actually enjoy it. Whatever he attempts to do for the movie, I think it's original, and I think it should be really respected, because it's quite I guess even beautiful, elegant's the word. It's quite elegant to look at to hear. Yes, there's an infusion of hip hop in a 1920s novel, an F. Scott Fitzgerald classic, The Great Gatsby. But it works some crazy way. It works. I don't know how. Don't ask me how. I know I'm supposed to know this, but for some reason, I really enjoyed the way the movie was shot and sounded. I thought it was very, very original, and that's hard to do in so many years that we're into movies. It's so hard to be original. And it's also so hard to be original when the story is not original. When the story's a book, and when it's already been made into a movie, it's so hard to take that on again. I think Leo was amazing in the movie. I think this was the role he was really born to play. I think he was. There was times where he was over the top as the character of Jay Gatsby, but I still enjoyed his character, and I was really, really involved and wanted to know what was going to happen. Even though I've read the book, I still was interested in the way he was being taken on Baz Luhrmann's journey and F. Scott Fitzgerald's journey. The biggest thing that I'll always remember about this movie is the relationship between Leonardo DiCaprio and Carey Mulligan's characters. I thought it was well played out, and I thought it was really, really, I invested so much into it. And that was that really plays into Baz Luhrmann's directing and their each of their acting, and of course the music. You know, that that Lana Del Rey song, it was huge, and it works so well in the movie and in the scenes, especially that scene where Jay comes in, you know, from the rain, and you know he has her over at Tobey Maguire's house. Speaking of Tobey Maguire, I think he was the I don't want to say the worst. He was mediocre. He was the most mediocre thing about the movie. So I give this movie about an 8.6. I think the escapism, I was so invested into this movie, into these characters, and I think it really did hit on all fronts for me. So that's pretty high. The next movie I got to see wound up becoming what will be known as my favorite movie of 2013 so far, quickly climbing into my top 50. It's got to be in the 40s or maybe even the 30s by now, and that's Star Trek II Into Darkness. I love this movie. There's so much that I can say about it. There's a whole podcast episode alone that I can say about it. But let me just give you the short excerpts of it. I think this movie was wonderful because, you know, I've never been a Star Trek fan. The only time I've ever seen William Shatner is in the Priceline commercials. I know nothing about villains, characters, you know, I knew nothing about them. Having seen the first reboot movie from J.J. Abrams, the first Star Trek movie, I loved it. I thought it was so interesting to watch. I think it'll be forever known as one of the better sci-fi fantasy movies that we will ever have. And then I heard Star Trek Into Darkness was being made. And once I saw it, I think it was even better than the first one. It's even better than some of the Star Wars movies that I've seen. This is an exceptional film in so many ways. Partly the fact because of its acting. Its ensemble cast is like second to none. You know, you can't find many you can't find a better way to get together so many good actors. And that goes from, you know, from Captain Kirk down the list. I love the performances in this. I love the action in it. And I'm not really a big person when it comes to action movies, but I love the action in this movie. It was somehow, some way, it was so real. It wasn't off-putting. You know, it wasn't so far-fetched. He made you believe that this can actually happen. You know, that this Starfleet can be real. Great movie. Probably a 9.6 for me on whatever scale I do to view movies. I can't really find many things wrong with it. The best thing I will say was Benedict Cumberbatch and the ensemble cast. Benedict Cumberbatch is one of my favorite actors now. I love the work that he's doing, and he is a real actor given a villain performance, and he knocked it out of the park. So great job for Star Trek Into Darkness, my favorite movie of 2013 so far. Then I saw Hangover 3. I thought that sucked. If you like the characters and if you've seen the first two movies and you've laughed a lot at the first two movies, you're probably going to like this movie. I just think it wasn't funny at all. I think it was more of an action and more of an attempt at an action movie than it was a comedy. There was too much of Chow in there. You know, he's really not he's funny to an extent. You know, he's like the drunk guy at a party. You know, he's funny for the first 10-15 minutes, then he's just annoying. And that's generally what I saw about Hangover 3. You know, I loved Hangover 1. I think it was a great comedy movie. It was a comedy movie that had so many, you know, that has so many fun characters in it and so many fun story arcs throughout. But as it went on, it just got kind of bad. You know, just keep the first one. There's no real reason to have a Hangover 2 and Hangover 3 besides the fact of money. So Hangover 3 was really not that good. I'd probably give it around a 4.5, and that's being a little generous just because the fact that I like some of the actors and I happen to like Todd Phillips, but I hope he gets back on his game now that the Hangover franchise is done. Now You See Me had a nice, great big cast, interesting movie, very original in its story. But I think the ending was something that was a little displeasing to me. I think it was an ending that wanted so much to throw the audience off, and by doing so, managed to ruin the movie's reputation for me. For me, some people are like, oh my goodness, look at the end of that movie. That was crazy. He was that. What? That's not how I feel at all about it. Even though I enjoyed the cast and I thought the story was very original, I just think it it, and I think also the directing and the cinematography was very appealing too. It had a lot of potential. Didn't love the ending. That's kind of the only part of the movie that I didn't like. Everything else was pretty good. So I'd give it about a 7-ish. 7. Right on about 7 on the money. So that wraps up May. Then in June, I got to see a bunch of movies. One of them was The Purge. I thought The Purge was a decent film. I think the story, again, another story that was original in its attempt, but the fact that they made it an In Your House thriller, and what I mean by In Your House thriller is like a movie like Panic Room or like The Strangers. When you put it as an In Your House thriller, generally your budget is going to be much, much less, right? Because all you have to do is deal with making a movie in this house and paying your actors, basically. So the fact that they had this really, really original story, and they didn't let it be experienced outside of this house was real. Brought the movie's respect for me really, really down. So I would say it probably falls into about the 6.2 category for me, 6.2 rating for me. You know, for $3 million that they got for it, I guess it was a pretty decent movie, but I just wish if they needed more money to give them more money to make a movie outside of that house and experience the world around this really good idea of a story. The next one that I got to see was one of the most anticipated movies of the past summer, which was Man of Steel, the new superhero movie. I enjoyed Man of Steel to some extent. Obviously, it was kind of Nolan-esque in the fact of the way it was made, and the ensemble cast was very strong. I just think that I don't think it was as successful as an origin story as the way Batman's origin story was. I think we know Superman so much that you don't want to be told the origin story. It's like, we know he's Clark Kent. He works at the newspaper. We got it. Okay. Let's see him as Superman. And we did in this movie, but we also had to build his origin story. And that was kind of a little uninteresting to me. And I just think that the villain, Michael Shannon, who I love, I think he's great in Take Shelter and he's great in Revolutionary Road. I think he was one of the actors that, even though he's this real actor and you're like, wow, well, he's going to be really good at this, I think they made him too superhero-y, and they didn't fully give a nice creative, imagination to his character. They made the film somehow this fusion between Christopher Nolan's world of the way he made his Batman movies, and then another fusion of the Avenger world, and they tried to clash him, and I don't think the clash was good. I don't think it worked as well as it should have, but I do think it was an entertaining movie, and I want to give it another chance before I can truly say my rating on it. But for right now, I would say it sits around a 7.3 for me. I think obviously the storytelling was good, and I think the story was what lacked. And as far as the escapism, I want to be fully invested in that world, you know, where he is. I want to be fully invested in Metropolis and his character arc, but I wasn't, and that was a little problem for me. So I'd give it around a 7.2. Then I saw This Is the End. I've talked about this a couple weeks ago. I give it about a 4, you know, maybe a 3.9. I just didn't like it. That's my opinion. I go more into depth about it a couple episodes ago, so you can check that out. Monsters University was next. I thought it was an entertaining movie, you know, it was a fun time at the movies. It's what the summer movie season is really meant for. It's an animated movie. It's supposed to be a fun and exciting time, and it was. It wasn't as good as the first one, obviously, but I think it was a good attempt. I love the characters. I love the voices. You know, I love the college thing that they did. They made that really interesting and original. So that was a fun time at the movies. No critic should be too judgmental on a Pixar movie. You know, even though these Pixar movies are really, really good sometimes, there hasn't really been a bad one. You know, they know what they're doing over there. They just sit in the movie theater and watch it. You know, take your critic hat off and just enjoy the experience and enjoy movies. All right, let's quickly go through some of the other ones that I've seen so we can kind of wrap it up. Bling Ring was... I wanted to see more. I think Sofia Coppola is very, very talented. I love Lost in Translation, and Emma Watson was in it, and, you know, she's wonderful. I always, obviously, since The Potters, she's a good actress, but she wasn't in there enough. So that was, it was a yuck. I saw Grown Ups 2. I think that was horrible. I didn't enjoy that movie at all. I think Nick Swartzen is ruining movies. I think Adam Sandler needs to really sit down and reevaluate what he's doing in movies. He's obviously he's obviously so far away from the Big Daddy, you know, Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, Mr. Deeds movies that we know and love him in. So I hope he comes back. But so far he hasn't been doing it. He's been making shit after shit. The Conjuring will, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, very, very original and very, very, one of my new favorite horror movies. Love this film. My second favorite movie that I've seen this summer. Go see it. You really need to experience it if you like horror movies. It manages to bring all of these things that we see in horror movies, these hauntings and possessions and ghosts and all this stuff, and it winds up to bring it into this great, you know, move, great story that's supposed that, you know, it's based on true events. I love that movie. Love the way it was directed. Love the acting. Wolverine was another movie that I thought was a little too superhero-y. Didn't really like the ending. I know movies like Wolverine have made, you know, Hugh Jackman's career, but I know he's better than this. I've seen him in Les Mis. I know he's better than this. And I also seen him in Prisoners lately. Two Guns was pretty interesting. I liked Mark Wahlberg in it a lot. I think Denzel was okay. I liked the different kind of plot twist and all that. It was a pretty cool movie. I'd give that a look. I'd probably put that in probably around the 6.7, just because it didn't really interest me that much, but I thought it was pretty cool. It's worth a glance. The next movie I saw was The Butler, and this was a movie that I enjoyed for a couple of reasons. I enjoyed it as a person who wants to make and a person who studies film, and I also enjoyed it as a person who studies American history and who enjoys learning about presidents. I do like the historical, the way that this was made, involving history, involving different presidents, and obviously a great cast of many different actors. I liked it very, very much for all of those things. I thought it was an interesting story. I loved, you know, learning about this butler and learning about his family. And I also loved learning about how these times were, how, you know, these times of importance in American history were. The biggest off-putting part of it, of the movie for me, was the way Lee Daniels kind of tricked the audience a couple of times. What Lee Daniels did that bothered me was that he made it seem that the butler was some kind of heavy advisor in the decision-making of a president. He does this about two or three times where he'll have one of the scenes that the butler is talking to the president, and then he'll cut to the next scene being a big decision or a big speech that was made, as if he was trying to say that it was the butler's words that had the president thinking to make that decision. I didn't admire that at all. I think, you know, as much as you want to, I don't know how much this movie's been praised on its historical accuracy. From what I've read, it's pretty there, it's pretty close. But to suggest to the audience that the butler was the advisor to the president's decision making was a little off-putting to me. Actually, it was a lot off-putting to me. And I'm not trying to get into any racial thing or anything like that. But, you know, the president's decisions are really decided based on his own mind and his advisors, his very well, you know, educated advisors' minds. And I don't like how he tried to persuade his audience that the butler was like the president, that he made these decisions for the president. I didn't like that. But in general, I did enjoy the movie. I'd probably give it about a 7.7. I liked the acting a lot. I do think it was a little too long of a movie. And while even though his family dynamic was extremely interesting and really drives the movie emotionally, I would have liked to see more interactions with these presidents. You know, these presidents were so well acted, and I would have liked to see more interactions between the White House. I wanted to see that play more of a bigger part. But also the family dynamic was very, very interesting, and it was intriguing. And again, it drives the movie emotionally. So there were a few more movies that I'm not going to get a chance to talk to about today. And as long as I highlighted the big important ones and my opinions on them, I think the top three of this mediocre summer movie season, the three diamonds in the rough were Star Trek, The Conjuring, and Great Gatsby. I think the bottom three would be three comedies, Grown Ups 2, This Is the End, and Hangover Part 3. Again, I think this summer movie season was mediocre. I think it was one of the worst we've had in 5 years. And, you know, we only hope that there are going to be bigger budget movies and bigger summer blockbusters. You know, we hope the superhero movies that are that just keep coming out are going to be good and exciting, and you know, they're going to be sought after. But me as a movie viewer, I don't build my high hopes for the summer movie season. I build for the months after. You know, that's the time that's my blockbuster season. That's when I love going to the movies for 2 hours to be totally invested into a drama or whatever it is. Even movies like Thor and Lord of the Rings. I'm sorry, not Lord of the Rings. The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug is even coming out, and The Hunger Games. You know, so I look forward to this season a little bit more than I like the summer movie season. But you know, I still enjoy a nice action packed thriller every once in a while, just like the next guy. So thank you very much for listening to episode 3. I hope you enjoy this podcast. I hope whatever you're doing, you're enjoying, and I hope whoever you're doing is enjoying you. Does that make sense? That was, somehow that managed to be sexual. I don't know how that happened. I didn't plan for that. All right, yeah. Keep watching the movies. Goodbye, everybody.